This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year.
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations. Forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
It's the amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Rico Bronya. The New York Mets win yet another series, a series that I got to be honest with you, I didn't see coming. Going to Los Angeles, winning 2 of 3 against the LA Dodgers, the Mets win yet another series. We should all be in a good mood. We should all be happy as they head to San Francisco. But I have to admit, there is a little bit of a cloud hanging over this weekend in Los Angeles. Now, we did do a podcast reacting to the Friday night victory. It was a great win. It was a fun win. It was a nice win, so we won't break down Friday night. We will eventually break down the Saturday win, which was a wild game, and a little bit on Sunday's game. I mean, it was a waste of time. We got our ass kicked, and we all moved on. But the cloud that is hanging over is a cloud I didn't even realize on Friday night. On Friday night, when the Mets won that great game against the LA Dodgers and showed that New York Met balls that they have shown a little bit throughout 2024, I caution. Hey, I hope Francisco Alvarez is okay. And I hope his thumb is okay. But you saw early in that game when he fell to the ground and he used his hand to brace it as he was rounding first base on an error by Will Smith that he kind of jammed his thumb again. Then he slides into second base. Again, his hand is on the ground. The Mets go out. They take a look at him. He stays in the game, but that was, you know, temporary. Because then within a few minutes, Omar Narvaez comes in. And I only mentioned it briefly on Friday night because I don't know what the severity of this was going to be. My only hope was it's a day-to-day thing or it's an IL stint, but it's a brief IL stint. It has been like a pit in my stomach over the last 24 hours realizing the severity of this injury. It is a fractured thumb. He's having surgery. Carlos Mendoza basically put us out of our world when he said, oh, yeah, he's having surgery next week. And he's going to miss a while. We hope to have him back this season, I think was the quote that Mendy had. We hope to have him back this season. And look, I get that one player should not derail a season. So I want to make this very, very clear. The cloud hanging over this weekend is not that this injury should end the Mets' hopes in 2024. BS. We have seen many a player get hurt and teams overcome it. And Francisco Alvarez is still a growing young player who's actually in a pretty big batting slump after his hot start. So it's not that the team can't overcome it. That's not the cloud. It's not the fact that we now have to live in a world in which Tomas Nido plays baseball and we have to watch it despite him actually having a productive Sunday. The cloud is the hope of Francisco Alvarez having this monster season and being one of those building blocks that we can watch throughout the year, good or bad, and then know we have him on our team for the next decade. And look, that latter part hasn't changed. It's not like his career is over, but it sucks. It's one of those injuries that just sucks. It's one of those injuries where, you know, sometimes a guy gets hurt, and I think Brooks Raley is a good example of it. Brooks Raley is off to a tremendous start this season. He has been such a weapon out of this Met bullpen. And to hear he's got this elbow inflammation, and he's going on the IL. It stinks. You know, you also know it could only be a couple of weeks. But then there's other injuries that hurt a little bit more. A young, burgeoning star like Francisco Alvarez. So, look, Saturday was a great, great game, and we'll break it down. And this was still a very productive weekend, and I'm not giving up on the season by any kind of craziness. It just stinks. I acknowledge that. I'm not able sometimes to just say, yeah, whatever, we won, who cares? The win was nice on Saturday, but knowing that Francisco Alvarez is probably out for months, I mean, let that marinate in our heads. And yeah, maybe I should admit, the clout probably does have a lot to do with Tomas Nito. Because even though Omar Narvaez is a more than capable backup, Omar Narvaez is capable of being a starting catcher in Major League Baseball. And I mean that. Look around the sport. Look at some of the starting catchers in baseball. And I would definitely say that on a handful of teams, Omar Narvaez could be their starting catcher. So the Mets are positioned well with a solid backup. But I also know that in 2024, catchers do not play every single day, which means once or twice a week in all likelihood, we will then have to watch a third string catcher. And unfortunately, our third string catcher is Tomas Nito. And do not be fooled by what happened on Sunday. Don't tell me, but he was the first catcher to throw a guy out stealing, which I could have told you before the game even started. That was an obvious one. Ron Darling even said it on the broadcast. Tomas Nito is going to be the first Met catcher to throw a guy out trying to steal, and he did just that. Who's surprised by that? And then he had a meaningless single when they were down 10-0 late in the game. Listen, the reality of Tomas Nito is that he's a wonderful guy. He's a overrated defensive catcher, but he is a decent defensive catcher, if that makes any sense. Like, he's decent, but he's not as highly regarded as maybe some Met fans or some of the Met organization like to claim he is. And now he's in our world for the next 3 months, because it really is going to be months. So before we get into all of the good from this weekend in LA, and there certainly was a lot of good, to me, this is me speaking, the headline coming out of the weekend in LA is that we aren't going to get to watch Francisco Alvarez for a few months. And here's what this does. It does two things. Number one, yeah, puts a lot of pressure on Omar Narvaez to be a capable backup. But now, despite the way DJ Stewart has played and he's performed, despite that, to me, it puts pressure on JD Martinez to come back and be a contributor. Because I think what the Mets have been able to do over the last couple of weeks, especially offensively, where they've scored a ton of runs until they ran into Tyler Glasnow on Sunday afternoon, is they have been able to almost make you forget that they signed JD Martinez. They've been able to do that. And even though JD doesn't replace Francisco Alvarez positionally, he can replace him in terms of being that fearsome right-handed bat in the middle of the order that I had envisioned and hoped Alvarez was going to be this season. At least he was for the first, you know, week and a half of the season when he got moved up to cleanup, was producing, and then finally he cooled off and then he dropped down back in the order. So I think it pressures, at least in my mind, the return of JD Martinez. Now, there's good news attached with that because JD's actually playing rehab games, played a game in St. Lucie, had a couple of hits. He's going to go to Syracuse for a couple of days. So it is definitely viable that, barring no setbacks, we are going to see JD Martinez on Friday night against the St. Louis Cardinals, and that is a positive. But the Francisco Alvarez injury, to me, it's a cloud that hovers over a little bit of what was a really good baseball weekend for the Mets. Now, let's get to Game 2 and Game 3. We'll read some of your emails. We'll preview the series against San Francisco. But let us all marvel in the fun of winning 2 out of 3 against the LA Dodgers. Let's marvel in the fun of Reed Garrett, because there are headlines to describe this winning streak. There are headlines to describe how the Mets have kind of fixed their season and gotten a 12-9 after an 0-5 start. And there's a lot of ways they've gotten there. But to me, I think the best story of this season, and I think as this season goes on, he could turn out to be one of the most important figures, is the journey that Reed Garrett has been on. Now, I did not expect Reed Garrett to pitch in Saturday's game. Little did I know he was going to get the last three outs, pick up his first major league save, and dominate all the way there. So the headline of this game, in my crazy opinion, is Reed Garrett. But let's get to this game. This was a very, very ugly first few innings. Gavin Stone couldn't throw a strike. Jose Budo couldn't throw a strike. But I thought what was really, really encouraging was what Francisco Lindor did in that first at-bat. I think it is now safe to say that Francisco Lindor is waking up, that we no longer have to worry about his career being over, and I say that tongue-in-cheek, or him having to give up hitting from the left side, or he just stinks, or he can't handle New York. I think that Francisco Lindor with the home run on Friday, and you could call that the Francisco Lindor game on Friday night or the Harrison Bader game, whatever the hell you want to call it. But for him to respond first inning in a big spot, because when you have a runner on third base and nobody out in the top of the first inning at Dodger Stadium, to me, you have to score that run. If you don't score that run, that could kind of set the tone for a loss. So when Starling Marte struck out, and now Brandon Nimmo is still standing there on third base after his walk, stolen base, and wild pitch that got him to third, I needed Lindor to drive him in. I didn't give a crap how he did it. And if memory serves correct, I think they had brought the infield in. I think Cousin Dave had brought the infield in, and Lindor was behind in the count 0-2. And so despite that home run on Friday night, you may think I'm nuts. That's a huge at-bat in the first inning. That's why when people talk about this guy never gets a big hit, that guy never gets a big hit, sometimes big hits aren't easily defined by stats, because there is no stat that would say that on a Saturday afternoon in L.A. in a 0-0 game in the top of the first inning, that's a big at-bat. I'm just telling you, I felt like it was a big at-bat for the reasons I just laid out. You have a runner on third, nobody out. If DeMarte struck out, if Lindor can't drive him in and Pete can't drive him in, I think that sets the terrible tone for the game. So that's a big at-bat. And off the bat on 0-2, he lifts one to left field, and I'm relieved. I'm like, all right, got the run home. It's 1-0. I feel good. And it kept going and going and going and drifted over Teoscar Hernandez's head. And even though the Mets couldn't score another run, though they did load the bases before Harrison Bader grounded out, very, very big at-bat by Francisco Lindor. Then we get to Jose Buhdo. And Jose Buhdo's final line will read 4 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts, 5 walks. Not very good. Yet, I think this may have been Jose Buhdo's most impressive outing. You're damn right. Because it's the LA Dodgers. It's the murderer's row of Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, and Freddie Freeman, who he wanted nothing to do with, if we're being honest. And I think Met pitching showed that, especially in this game. Edwin Diaz showed that. They had wanted nothing to do with those three guys. But I thought what was really impressive by Jose Buhdo was the first inning. Gives up a leadoff double to Mookie, walks Shohei Ohtani, first pitch, Freddie Freeman RBI single. So boom, 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 1-0 turns into 1-1, and the Dodgers are set up with 2-1 and nobody out. This had a chance to be a disaster. Really, it had a chance to be Sunday's game, if we're being honest, where the Mets just get completely blown out. And that's why the pitching line doesn't do Jose Buhdo justice. He strikes out Teoscar Hernandez, and after he walks Max Muncy, he strikes out both Outman and Pagias to get out of that first inning. And he threw a million pitches, but it's 1-1. And I think we're all thinking, all right, we at least have a baseball game here. So I thought the poise that Buhdo showed in the bottom of the first inning was pretty incredible. And then even in the second inning, he gets the first two guys out, 8 and 9, which is very important. I mean, getting the 8 and 9 hitters out when you're facing this Dodger team is like essential, even though the Mets didn't always do that throughout this weekend. He walks Mookie Betts. He walks Shohei Ohtani. He walks Freddie Freeman. And I'm sitting there thinking, you know what? I don't blame him. I don't blame him. You make one bad pitch to any of those three guys, you're looking at a different game. But if you're going to walk three guys in a row, and look, he didn't do it intentionally, but he wasn't very close. I mean, Buhdo was clearly pitching around basically everybody. You're talking about three MVP candidates. Usually a team may have one of those guys, not three of them, hitting back to back to back. But again, he shows the poise. He strikes out Teoscar Hernandez. I thought that showed a lot. He had a very efficient bottom of the third inning. He had a very efficient bottom of the fourth inning. And now all of a sudden, Jose Buhdo, after throwing a million pitches in the first two innings, actually has a chance to get through the fifth inning. It felt like a freaking miracle. And then you're throwing that the Mets hand him a lead because Starling Marte came up big with an RBI single in the fourth inning when the Dodgers went to their bullpen. Dave Roberts didn't last with Gavin Stone very long, mainly because he was walking the building, and the Mets just couldn't get that big hit early. They had a few opportunities. Had an opportunity in the second. They put a couple of guys on base, had 2-1 and 2 out in the third, couldn't come through. And then finally, Marte comes through with that big hit in the fourth inning, and Jose Buhdo starts the fifth inning, which seemed insane after the first two innings of the game. Seemed like there was no chance. He threw 32 pitches in the first inning. He had a pitch count of 73 through three innings and somehow has a chance to start the fifth inning. And I'm managing along, and I was very mixed about Buto starting the fifth inning. I'll tell you why. A part of me loved the fact that Mendoza was pushing him and giving him that opportunity to try to secure a victory. If we care about wins anymore, I personally don't. In fact, I only bring it up because I know a lot of people still care about it. I don't give a rat's ass. So I'm not even thinking, hey, who's Jose Buto get through the fifth inning so I can get the guy a victory. Meanwhile, Jose Buto has one career win. So maybe he's thinking about it because he doesn't have a lot. But I liked it. Or here's where I was mixed, I should explain. The part of me that liked it was, hey, you can't go to the bullpen in the fifth and sixth inning every single day, yet the Mets managed to do it. Number two, give Buto a shot. I mean, the guy had come out and he had retired seven in a row. So he was putting together something nice as we start the fifth inning. But then the other part of me said, all right, I got Otani, I got Freeman, I got Teoscar, but then I got Muncy. So I got three left-hand hitters in four at-bats coming up. And then James Outman, who's also a lefty. So I guess you could extend that even further. Why not just go to Jake Diekman, get the matchups I like, not necessarily against Otani and Freeman because they're great, but certainly against Max Muncy and even James Outman, assuming Dave Roberts doesn't pinch hit. Why don't I get the matchup? Because how much does Jose Buto have left? And he's already shown you he does want to pitch around the big-time hitters. So the brain and strategizing how to get these final, I guess it's 15 outs at this point, thought, let me go to the bullpen, and specifically Diekman, not Raley. I don't think you're going to Raley in the fifth inning of this game. Meanwhile, Brooks Raley probably wasn't even available, considering what we now found out about him. So I was mixed. The baseball side of me said, screw it. Let's go to the bullpen. Let's mix and match. But then the other side of me said, let's see what Jose Buto's got. He gives up the leadoff double to Otani, and Mendy still keeps him in the game. And I'm like, okay, all right. I don't love it, but all right. He gets Freddie Freeman a ground out, and that was huge. That may have been, you know, looking back at this start, that may have been his most impressive out, besides getting all those big strikeouts. Freddie freaking Freeman, who had already been on base twice, had an RBI single in the first inning. You walked him on five pitches in the second inning. He gets Freddie to ground out and then got so unlucky. Hit Teoscar Hernandez with a 2-2 pitch, and that was it. And that's when Mendy went to the bullpen, and he goes to Michael Tonkin. Oh, that's where me and Mendy broke off. You're in a close game right now. You're in a 2-1 game in the fifth inning, and we're going to this guy, the guy that you DFA'd, the guy that you brought back. We're going to Michael Tonkin. And I'm telling you, that first pitch he threw to Max Muncy, I thought it was gone. I thought Muncy parked it. Luckily, he just missed it. Hits a fly ball to right field. Actually turns into a sacrifice fly. Game is tied up at two. And to Tonkin's credit, he strikes out James Outman. But I did not want to go to him. I would have gone to anybody else but him. To the Mets' credit, what do? This is the story of the 2024 Mets, at least in April. May change in May. They respond every single time. Every time they seem to respond. And what I thought was sort of interesting from Carlos Mendoza, and we saw this in the top of the sixth inning, is he very quickly went to his bench. We saw some aggressiveness in terms of, you know what? I'm going to pinch hit for Joey Wendell in the sixth inning because there's a lefty on the mound, and I'm going to go with Zach Short, of all people. Now, what I didn't even realize at the time is that Brett Beatty was available because Brett Beatty would pinch hit later in the game. I think I just would have used Brett Beatty. I know it's lefty-lefty, so maybe that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense, but Brett's hit lefties this season. So who do you trust, Brett Beatty against the lefty or Zach Short? I'll let everybody answer that together. Who do you trust, Beatty versus a lefty or Zach Short?
Brett Beatty.
There you go.
You're welcome.
Now, the beauty of this is I love to bring stuff up even if we turned out to be wrong or the results worked. Zach Short drew a walk. But I'm being honest. Like, in that moment, who the hell wants to see Zach Short? And then Mendy asked for the bunt. Are we good with the bunt? I'm a big bunt guy. Were you okay with the bunt with Omar Narvaez? Again, it's against a lefty, So I think that may play a part in it. It's a tie game, top of the sixth inning, got the top of the order coming up. I love it. I'm good with the bunt. Are you good with the bunt?
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I'm okay with the bunt knowing that the other option is strikeout.
Or the other option is a double play.
Well, that too. But an out nonetheless, it's not productive.
First, I want to make this very clear to all the Met fans out there that hate the bunt, okay? When Tomas Nito plays, now this wasn't Tomas Nito, this was Omar Narvaez against the lefty, but you know what? Not too far off. When Tomas Nito plays, treat him like a pitcher. The Mets should bunt every time Nito comes up with less than two outs and a guy on first base. That needs to be a rule. And the only reason I'm not going to complain about it from Sunday is I think it was like 8-0 by that point, or 10-0 when he came up with a runner on first and less than two outs. Hold on, let me look at my scorecard. Yeah, it was the sixth inning and they were down 10-0. So that's okay. I give you permission to not bunt down 10-0, but I do not mind the bunt. And I said this last time when people were bitching about, who is it who laid down a bunt? Somebody laid down a bunt. Everybody was complaining about it.
Was it McNeil?
Yeah, it was Jeff McNeil. Yeah. It always depends on the situation. So again, here's your situation. Top of the sixth inning, tie game, lefty on the mound, lefty batter and Omar Narvaez, top of the order coming up. No brainer. And Omar got it down. Nimmo gets hit by a pitch. Starling Marte, three-run bomb. Another one of those really encouraging things from the early going is Starling Marte. He has four home runs, second most on the team. He has now driven in 12 runs. So Starling Marte has given you that hope and that belief that we are going to see him more look like 2022 than 2023. And for the most part, he gets run out there every day. He'll get some DH days, but for the most part, Starling Marte is out there every day. Once Marte hits that home run, got to win this game. That's how I view it. You know, not that in the second inning I don't care about the game. I always want to win the game, but there are certain moments in a baseball game where you better win it now. And when Marte gives you a three-run lead going into the bottom of the sixth inning where you still need these 12 outs, you have to win this freaking baseball game. Mendoza keeps Michael Tonkin in. He didn't have to, because three-batter minimum doesn't work once you've finished an inning. But he still gives us Michael Tonkin. What the hell does he do? Hits a batter, gives up a hit to a 7-8 hitter. You can't do that. You know, when you face the Dodgers, here's the bottom line. When you are facing the bottom of the order, you better get those guys out. You cannot put guys on base with those monsters coming up. He does get a big strikeout of Austin Barnes and then pulls him for Drew Smith. And look, I tell you how pitching lines can be very misleading. How I thought Jose Budo's 4 2/3 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 6 Ks, 5 walks was actually one of his most impressive performances. Drew Smith didn't give up an earned run. Drew Smith sucked on Saturday. I don't give a damn what its final line says. He walks Betts, gets a big strikeout of Ohtani, 2-run single to Freddie Freeman, walks Teoscar Hernandez, and then gets bailed out by Alonso. Max Muncy rips a base hit that should tie the game, maybe even give the Dodgers the lead. Pete Alonso, headlong dive, races to first base because Drew Smith is too busy, you know, Instagramming some model he wants to date. And Pete gets the first base on his own, dives in it, inning over. Pete Alonso saved his ass. Drew Smith was not good, to say the least. He was not good. But hey, the Mets have a one-run lead. Now, they got to get nine outs against the Dodgers. And I'm game planning what anyone who listens to the Rico a lot and knows my weird bullpen obsessions would know what I'm starting to think about with a one-run lead and nine outs to go. And that is our first true test for Carlos Mendoza. How does he deploy Edwin Diaz? So to me, it's very, very simple. You've got three monsters in the Dodger order. He's got to be the ones trying to get those monsters out if the Mets have a lead. So Jorge Lopez, to his credit, gets through the seventh inning. And he got very, very lucky to do so because he gives up a leadoff base hit. Podgers hits that ground ball to third base in which the slide by James Outman is ruled to be illegal and too late, and it turns into a double play. So I didn't think it was. I didn't think it would be. Who the hell knows how these umpires decide on legal slides, illegal slides, but beggars cannot be choosers. We take it. And Jorge Lopez is able to get through the seventh inning, and now things are really tricky. Very, very tricky. Because it's the eighth inning, you've got the ninth place hitter, and then you've got the top of the order. Do you go to Edwin Diaz immediately, especially knowing the ninth place hitter isn't going to be Austin Barnes, it's going to be Will Smith? So essentially, the Dodgers are going to send up, not in the order of 1, 2, 3, 4 in terms of best hitters, but 4, and then 1, 1, 1. Because Ohtani, Freeman, Betts, they're all tied basically, right? And Will Smith is a really good fourth bat in this Dodger lineup. I would have gone to Diaz. I wouldn't have effed around. Carlos Mendoza, who we're still learning about, decides to dip his toe in, kind of dips the toe in by allowing Lopez to face Will Smith. I wouldn't have done that. I would have gone right to Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning. By the way, the Mets tacked on a run by another big hit by Lindor behind in the count. So Francisco Lindor is back. Can we say that? Do we feel good about that? He's back. And he did it against another right-handed pitcher. He did it batting left-handed, which is really encouraging. Now, they got that run because Mookie Betts made a horrific play at shortstop and Starling Marte stole second base. So there were some things that led to Lindor coming up with that big hit, but that makes it a two-run game. So when we're talking about the prism at the bottom of the eighth inning, remember, it's a two-run game. I still wouldn't have done anything differently. I would have gone to Edwin Diaz immediately. I think what Mendy was doing was saying, I'm going to try to steal outs with Lopez until the tying run comes to the plate. Which makes me wonder if the Mets don't tack on the extra run, does Diaz start the eighth inning the way I would have done it? Either way, Lopez gets the first guy out, and then he walks Mookie Betts, and boom, it's Edwin Diaz time. And I loved it. I love the fact he's using him in the eighth inning. Even if I would have deployed him a little bit differently and two batters earlier, whatever. The fact that this manager, in his first chance to do it, has shown you, I'm going to use my best pitcher in the biggest spot of a game, even if it means he's not getting a save. That's what I needed. That's what I wanted. And so on April 20th, on 420 day, 2024, that was the day I said, all right, Mendy, I got you. Okay. I'm feeling you. Now, as far as what happened, Edwin Diaz put us on a ride. Edwin Diaz said, all right, let's have some fun. And I'm not sure if Diaz was necessarily pitching around Ohtani and Freeman or if he just wasn't locating his slider the way he normally can. Edwin Diaz two years ago, was a video game. Like, that's how good his command was. And sometimes your greatness isn't just stuff. It isn't just velocity. It's command. Like Matt Harvey at his best, it was video game stuff. Like, I'm going to put the ball right there. That's where it's going to go. So it may not have been Diaz pitching around them more than it was. He lacked command, but he walks Ohtani. He walks Freeman. The bases are loaded for Teoscar Hernandez. Now, there's a lot going on in sports on this Saturday afternoon. So when I ask this question, I understand that many Met fans may not have been watching this live. Maybe they were locked in on the Knicks game. Maybe they were locked in on the Islanders game. Whatever other things you were locked in, and I have no idea. If you were watching this live, and you just witnessed Edwin Diaz issue back-to-back walks to Ohtani and Freeman, and now he's facing Teoscar Hernandez with a two-run lead. Be honest with me. Did you believe? I did. And I don't know why. Maybe Diaz earned so much of my trust from 2 years ago that I still had this confidence he was getting out of it, despite the back-to-back walks. Did you share that confidence, Hoff?
No, because we were due. Like sometimes it just happens. Like Edwin Diaz, I can't think of him as a machine like he was 2 years ago. He was so lights out. Yeah, you're right. You want to give him the benefit of the doubt. Like, hey, he's done it already. We've seen it. But eventually things catch up and, you know, everyone does have a bad day. So maybe today, maybe yesterday was his day.
So Pete had no balls. That's what Pete's telling you. He gave up. He said, screw it. Edwin Diaz is going to implode. It is rare for me to have that kind of confidence, but I think it says a lot about what Diaz did last 2 years ago. I keep saying last year, 2 years ago. And he rewarded it, man. He strikes out Teoscar Hernandez. He strikes out Max Muncy. And I think we all agreed, good night, Edwin. Thank you for your work. Not going to ask you to pitch the ninth inning. This is not October. It's an important game. I mean, you want to extend the winning streak to six. You want to beat the Dodgers. You had a three-run lead late. But I think it was more than fine for Mendoza to say, you got me the two most important outs in the eighth inning. Now let's hope we could add some insurance runs and blow the game wide open. They didn't do that. They went down 1-2-3. And that led to another really interesting decision from Carlos Mendoza. I made the assumption. I just assumed he was going to go to Adam Ottavino. And maybe I really assumed incorrectly because Ottavino got four outs on Friday night. Like Adam Ottavino did a little bit more work than normal on Friday night. But I assumed, hey, this is what Buck did last year. When Edwin pitches the eighth, he then goes to Ottavino in the ninth. I didn't realize Brooks Raley wasn't available. So I didn't know about that at the time. What I didn't think he would do was go to Reed Garrett. Because in my simplistic brain, which I clearly have to learn, I've got to learn this manager. I've got to learn his tendencies, was that he wasn't going to pitch Reed Garrett on back-to-back days. I didn't see it coming. And remember, what he had done on Friday night was stressful. He had thrown a bunch of pitches. He had done it in a big spot. Remember, Joey Wendell decided to try to screw him by playing terrible defense. So he goes to Reed Garrett in the ninth inning, and like a chef's kiss, oh my God. How did this happen to us? Have we found the golden arm? Have we found our Jabba Chamberlain? Now, hopefully Reed Garrett goes more than just 1 year and we don't create some stupid rules for him. But have we found that great reliever that came out of nowhere? And if it's too early to call him a great reliever, what I would ask is, when are we allowed to? Like, at what point are we allowed to get Reed Garrett jerseys? Like, is it too early? Like, is it too early for me to say I want my number 75 Reed Garrett? First of all, he's got a beard. He's got reddish hair. And the guy's unhittable. He pitched it wasn't an immaculate bottom of the ninth inning, but it was not far off. I mean, I look down, especially with the pitch clock these days. I'm still getting used to it a year plus in. I'm looking down and I'm right, strike one, strike two. I mean, it was boom, 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 boom. And that is why I said, you know, 20 minutes ago, because sometimes I go on and on about each individual game. I apologize. But hey, you downloaded the Rico. That's on you. You're listening to it. The headline to me was Reed Garrett. Because when Reed Garrett comes in the bottom of the ninth inning of a two-run game against the Dodgers, in which all they've got to do is get a couple of guys on base, and then it's the top of the order again. I assumed we were in set for like this incredibly stressful bottom of the ninth inning. And Reed Garrett was like, no, man, I got to check on Joel Embiid's knee. Can we go? Let's just get this crap done. And he pitched as dominant a 1-2-3 inning as you'll see. And I'm serious. You could email the pod, thericob@gmail.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 725-222-8699. Here's the question. When can we start purchasing Reed Garrett jerseys? That's what I want to know. Is April 21st, April 22nd too early, Hoff? Because this guy's the effing man.
I mean, dude, to buy a jersey takes a lot when you're a Met fan. It really does. Someone really special. But, I mean, at least for the season, you know you'll have it, right? Right? Now, I do have a question, though.
Yes.
To follow up. Who should take the bow for Reed Garrett? Is it David Stearns? Is it somebody else in the scouting department that found him that should tip? We should tip our cap to.
Well, I'm glad you said David Stearns. This just proves that it's easy to forget the last few months of last season. Reed Garrett was already here.
Oh,
he sucked last year. I mean, he existed. We just forgot about his existence because Reed Garrett made 9 appearances last year after they picked him up off waivers from the Baltimore Orioles. He pitched 17 innings. He allowed 11 runs. So he was already here. So no, David Stearns. I guess the pitching lab. I mean, that's the only thing that we can give credit to. The Mets have built this pitching lab, and they have figured something out with Reed Garrett. That's all. Oh, Jeremy Hefner, obviously, the pitching coach. He's a part of that pitching lab, sure. Give him credit. But this is a Billy Epler special. I have to admit, because Reed Garrett was not brilliantly picked up by David Stearns. He was already here. But listen to these numbers, because I think this is what is so amazing. So far this season, 10 and two-thirds innings in 6 appearances, 5 hits, 3 walks, 21 strikeouts. That means he is striking out 17.7 batters per 9 innings. To give you perspective, last year with the Mets, he threw 17 innings. So he threw 6 1/3 more innings. He struck out 16 guys. He has already struck out more guys this season through 10 and two-thirds innings than he has in any year of his major league career, which has featured, you know, starts and stops. He pitched briefly in 2019 with the Tigers, 15 1/3 innings, 15 runs, 10 strikeouts, 13 walks. I mean, those are abysmal. Then he was in the minors for a few years, pitched with Washington in 2022, 9 1/3 innings, 13 hits, 8 runs, 6 strikeouts. And then last year, briefly with Baltimore, with the Mets, and now, at 31 years old, he is off to as dominant a start as a reliever can. And here's why I believe in it more than I would any other reliever through 10 and two-thirds innings. Because it's easy to say, come on, it's 10 and two-thirds innings. The reason why you kind of are enamored by it is the swing and misses. It's the whiff percentage. I mean, he's not just pitching into good luck. It's not, oh, there's a line drive right at guys. He is unhittable. So I love the fact that Mendoza, A, used him on a back-to-back. We had talked a few Ricos ago about how do you deploy this incredible weapon. Is he going to be a multi-inning guy that you only use every 4 or 5 days? Or is this a weapon you're going to try to maximize? Well, we just saw him pitch in back-to-back games. The 1-2-3 inning, and then Saturday. See, Saturday he pitched an inning. Or Friday he pitched an inning. But remember, that was the inning in which Joey Wendell made 2 errors. So he was asked to do a lot in that one inning. But of all the things through the first, you know, how many games are we now at? 21 games through this season. That excites me the most. It's Reed Garrett. And by the way, number 2 may be Jose Buhdo. Look, if the Mets are going to be successful this season and build towards something next season, they were always going to have to be guys that we didn't expect. Always. That's what any good team has, especially out of a bullpen. And so far, small sample size alert, I am definitely intrigued by young Jose Buhdo, who has pitched well in the 3 starts he's made, and I thought showed some guts in this game against LA on Saturday, and Reed Garrett, who looks like this incredible weapon coming out of the bullpen. The other stuff, the obvious stuff, Marte having a bounce back year, McNeil having a bounce back year, Lindor and Alonso being who they are, those are the obvious stuff. Like, yeah, we know that. Luis Severino taking the baseball every 5 days and being effective. Jose Quintana being reliable. That's the obvious stuff, but you need some guys to step up out of nowhere to make an impact on a team. And right now, Reed Garrett and Jose Buhdo are doing that. Now, I'm not going to spend as much time on Sunday's game because God knows that was just an ass-whooping. That was one of those games where, I hate to say it, it just happens. Now, it's baseball, man. There's going to be a handful of games in which you just have no chance. And for a myriad of reasons, A, Tyler Glasnow was unhittable. That was not, you know, this Met offense has been so good this season. The Mets came in averaging 5.10 runs per game. They're basically putting up 6-7 runs every single night. So sometimes when you get shut down, you don't want to tip your hat to the pitcher. You don't want to do it. I hate doing it. I think in the case of Sunday, you almost have to. Tyler Glasnow was absolutely unhittable. The Mets didn't have many offensive opportunities against him. They had one And this will be my one critique. I hate to rip Lindor because Lindor has been waking up. But Lindor made a big, big mistake. I thought it was a dumb decision. So in Sunday's game, the Mets had a runner on first base with two outs in the third inning. And the runner was, it was Harrison Bader. The batter was Brandon Nimmo, and there were two outs. And I'm thinking to myself, this is where you run. Because if you steal the base, great. You got a runner in scoring position for Brandon Nimmo. Maybe you can steal a run. And if you're thrown out, no harm, no foul, I give Brandon Nimmo a clean at-bat to start the fourth inning. That's my leadoff hitter anyway. So those are one of those, it's just obvious you run. You know, maybe something good happens. Maybe it's thrown into center field. You never know. Bader runs. He gets thrown out. Perfect throw by Will Smith. Tip your hat. No harm, no foul. Smart aggressiveness. In the fourth inning of the game, Francisco Lindor rips a single up the middle off glass now. Impressive in its own right, by the way. That Lindor is so locked in now that he's even getting base hits from the left side against one of the tougher pitchers to hit in baseball and Tyler Glass now. So kudos to Lindor offensively. This has nothing to do with his bat. Pete Alonso's up. The count is 2-0. You can't run there. I do not like running there. You're down 2-0 in the game. Your biggest and best power hitter is not only up, he's in a spot in which maybe he gets a straight fastball and maybe Pete connects and maybe the Mets again respond immediately and it's 2-0. Or maybe Pete just rips one up the out. And on 2-0, Lindor is running. I hated it. As he was running, I hated it. And then Will Smith again made a perfect throw. Lindor's out. And it's not about him being out. It's about why are you running in that spot? And by the way, the 2-0 pitch was a ball. So now it's 3-0, or at least it should have been 3-0. I didn't like that. That's my only negative and really critique, because the rest of it's just, it is what it is. Adrian Hauser got his ass kicked. He's struggled to throw strikes this season. That's got to change. He got lucky he got through the first inning. He's lucky he got through the second inning. He's lucky it wasn't any worse in the third inning. He actually got bailed out by Tomas Nito, who threw out Will Smith trying to steal second base. First time the Mets have thrown a guy out trying to steal. Got through the fourth, and the fifth inning was just a disaster. And I really do believe that if the Mets hadn't had an overworked bullpen, I think they would have pulled Hauser quickly or quicker than Mendoza did. I think after he put the first two guys on base and walked Gavin Lux on four pitches to put two on and nobody out in the fifth, and the top of the order was coming up third time around, I think he would have pulled Hauser. I think the only reason Mendy stuck with him, and the only reason I'm okay with Mendy sticking with him, is Carlos Mendoza made a business decision in the bottom of the fifth inning. And that business decision was, we ain't winning this game. And I know that sucks to do when it's only 2-0, but he knew it. He knew it. He knew, A, I got to go to the bullpen now and somehow get out of a 2-0 jam in which I'm not going to have certain relievers available. And then B, I got to figure out a way for my offense to hit Tyler Glass now. He knew none of that was happening. And so the reason I believe he allowed Adrian Hauser to face Mookie Betts, base hit, Shohei Ohtani, base hit, Freddie Freeman, double, and Will Smith double, was because Mendoza knew what we all knew watching this game, which is that it was over. And so Adrian Hauser ended up taking one for the team. And then I give Mendoza credit. Game's over. Don't mess around. Grant Hartwig, Michael Tonkin, that's it. Let those losers take the axes, and let's get the hell out of town. And so it was an ass-whooping. It is what it is. It happens in baseball. But if this was a game, and it was a different situation in which the Mets hadn't had their bullpen taxed on Friday and Saturday, and they didn't have games on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, what I'd be saying is, what the hell was Mendoza thinking keeping Hauser in the game? But I know why he kept him in the game. I understand it. It's a 162-game season, and sometimes, Pete Hoffman, you have to make business decisions.
You took the series. You walk away with limited damage to as you know many players as possible, even though we took a lot of damage to Alvarez and Raley. But yeah, it was what it was. There was no coming back from that game. I agree with you on the stolen bases. I was a little, especially after Bader got thrown out stealing, I thought like, hey, Will Smith is locked in. Let's not take a risk. There's no reason to. So I was a little disturbed by that as well.
think it's all about situations. You know, Lindor is a veteran player, so I hold him maybe to a higher standard than a young, super aggressive player. It just didn't make any sense to steal. But again, it wasn't going to matter. Sunday's game was just a beatdown of epic proportions. Now I got to lick your wounds, and you got to get over it with these three games against San Francisco. And I'm going to give you a loser's mentality. I apologize. I had a loser's mentality going into the LA series to begin with, which was just win a game. That was my mentality. Mets obviously go out. They win Friday. They win Saturday. They win the series. I look at San Francisco and kind of think the same thing. And I know the Giants aren't a great team. They're a sub-500 team. But get a game. Don't let this turn into a losing streak. And get home after a 3-3 West Coast trip. Even if it started 2-0, I would take that as a success. That's the way I would view these three games against San Francisco. It's not like the pitching matchups are that devastating. Obviously, Logan Webb on Tuesday is tough. But this Keaton win against Jose Quintana, you actually feel like the Mets have the edge on. Logan Webb, Luis Severino. Logan Webb's their ace. Sevy's off to a great start. And then in the finale, Blake Snell has been just awful for the Giants. I'm going to predict to you, he is going to give you that first really good start as a Giant Wednesday afternoon, early start, last game of the West Coast trip. Write this one down. Snell's going, I was going to say six scoreless, but because it's Blake Snell, five scoreless. Got to take my shots.
Hey, you know what, though? Five scoreless still leaves you four innings to get to their bullpen. So I'll take that.
That is true. Just get a game in San Francisco. Get back here. If they get a game in San Francisco and they lose two, that would put them at 13-11 when they come home to face the St. Louis Cardinals, which is not a bad spot to be in. Now, let's get to some of your emails, RicoB@gmail.com. I don't want to leave any of you out. Let's go to Samuel. Samuel writes, Evan and Pete, some random observations on a happy Sunday morning in Metland. So this email was sent prior to losing 10-0. I don't have to listen to the post-LA series, Rico, to know, Evan, you absolutely loved Mendoza bringing in Edwin Diaz in the eighth inning when the game was on the line and the Dodgers' better hitters were up. If this winning and his managing continues on this line, Met fans will really warm up to him if they haven't already. Look, the key is winning. Obviously, it is with me, but I also like to see moves that make sense. And for way too many years, managers have made moves that have made no sense. Second thought from Sam is, it is beyond time for Mark Vientos to be here. There's nothing else for him to prove down there. Even if Beatty's fully healthy, I don't care. Vientos can get some at-bats at third base, at DH. JD won't play every single game and be a real bat off the bench. Why Zach Short remains on this team is a baffling mystery. We do not need his 125 batting average, career 173. Also, please tell me there are some major league catching alternatives to Tomas Nido. We cannot have this guy up here for the next 2 months, Sam. I wish there was. I mean, the Mets had the option to not call up Tomas Nido. They had to add him to the 40-man roster, and any catcher that they were going to add was going to be added to the 40-man roster. So they could have called up Hayden Singer. They could have called up Kevin Parada. They could have called up any young player. Now, I get why they didn't, but I don't know if the Mets are going to be super aggressive looking for real backup catcher. What I'd like to see from Mendoza, and he'll be tested right out of the gate with this first week of no Francisco Alvarez, is how much can you push Omar Narvaez? I'd push him. Like, he's going to play, and I know he can't play every day, but let's take the San Francisco series as an example. Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday afternoon. Does he have to sit one of those games? Like, is that a must? I mean, is it against the law for a catcher to play day game after night game? Let's go to the series at Citi Field against St. Louis. Night game, late day game, early day game. Like, can he play all three games? Here's what I'd like to see. The Mets have six games this week. Omar Narvaez should catch 5 of 6 at minimum. At minimum. We don't need Tomas Nido every game in every series. With that said, I don't think they're going to go out and add a backup catcher. Here's Dan. Dan has become kind of a regular character on the Rico Bronya. Dan is the guy who I describe to everybody as an emailer who's like that guy in Major League who's a Met fan, or in that case, an Indian fan, but basically hates everything the team does. Hey, everything sucks. Everything's going to end up badly. Just watch. Just wait and see. So what would Dan say after a six-game winning streak, and yeah, a loss at the end of the series against LA? What would Dan say? Dan would say this. Well, now that the magic's over, We get to see the size of those quote-unquote balls you have been clamoring or claiming this team now has that they haven't had before. Losing Alvarez, offense completely shut down by Glasnow, then getting whooped to cap off the series. This type of 24 hours could spiral a mentally weak team like they've shown to be in the past. Big response series coming up. Well, look, if they lose all three to San Francisco and it spirals, then you're right. I mean, we've seen, I think it was last year when they were playing really well, they started to kind of fix their season on the West Coast. They had one loss at the end of a series, and then it just turned into a disaster. So, yeah, sometimes one loss that doesn't feel like a bad one can spiral. I don't think they're going to spiral. But I also don't think they have to go out to San Francisco and win all three. I said it before, go win a game. So I guess I sort of agree with Dan. Just don't let it spiral. Spiraling would mean being swept of three games by San Francisco. I don't think they're going to do that. I do think that this winning streak is going to be unique for this team. I don't think we're going to have a lot of long winning streaks. I said that on the air before because the starting pitching is mediocre. Now, I know the starting pitching has put up good numbers this season, but we all know that the best case scenario for this rotation is mediocrity. Because even when it pitches well, they don't get a lot of innings from it. So you look at Sean Manaea, he's been up and down. He's had some bad downs like the game against Kansas City and some dominant ups. Adrian Hauser has mostly been down this season. Quintana's been straightforward solid, and Severino's been awesome. Can Severino keep up the latest awesomeness that he has? That would be a huge plus to this rotation. But because of that mediocrity, I think there are going to be days like Sunday afternoon where the starting pitching just doesn't keep you in a game. Jimmy writes about Jose Budo. Saturday's game was full of encouraging positives. One that might get overlooked, Jose Budo. He threw 83 pitches through the first four innings, 60 in the first two. With so many high-stress pitches in the first two innings and doing a great job getting out of trouble, I thought after a clean third inning, it'd be great to get one more out of him. And Mendoza did. I wouldn't have sent them out for the fifth inning. I heard a few people say Budo pitched scared, but I thought he pitched great. He managed the Dodger lineup and the smallest strike zone I've ever seen an umpire call. And great job by Mendoza giving Reed Garrett the ball to close out the game. What a find. Reed Garrett, he's only pitched 45 major league innings before this season. What an awesome start to the road trip. Dude, is this London trip for real? Yeah, I'm going to London. That is for real. It's like it's a sponsorship deal, man. They're sending me out there with my wife. You can buy tickets, classicescapes.com. And yeah, I think I hang out with people when I go to see Mets Phillies. It's a great deal. I look forward to it. It's the ultimate win-win because I get to go see the Mets in London, and my wife is so pumped up to go to London. Like, legitimately, she has said to me since we met back in 2014, I want to go to Europe, I want to go to Europe. We have never gone to Europe, and we're finally going to Europe, and the Mets may have something to do with it. Michael Esposito writes, I hope the Stearns trigger is quick with Adrian Hauser. He's a mop-up man at best on a winning team. The David Stearns trigger finger, which I know Pete has referred to and talked about here on the Rico, I think is completely overblown. Like, what he's done, I'm not ripping him. I'm just describing what's happened in a way that I don't see the same as you. I don't look at him as saying, you stink, I'm getting rid of you. I look at him as saying, hey, pitching is like an elevator. You know, it just is. Like, guys are going to come in, guys are going to be gone. And if I have to DFA you because you don't have any options left because there's someone else I'm going to call up, I'm going to do it. And oh, by the way, with my quick trigger finger, I may DFA you and then I may bring you back like Michael Tonkin. So I don't think this has been David Stern saying, I'm going to get rid of you. You stink, like he's George Steinbrenner on steroids. I think it's him viewing those last few spots in bullpens as expendable. And hey, maybe I'll get you back. Maybe I won't, but I've got other guys down in the system. Adrian Hauser is going to remain in this rotation for now. But to Michael's point, if he continues to struggle, he now has an ERA above 7. There are other options. Christian Scott is an option. Joey Lucchesi will eventually be an option. David Peterson, as he returns from the IL, is an option. And yes, Kodai Senga is on his way back. So as the two trains in the night pass, Jose Budo is becoming a safer rotation man, and Adrian Hauser may be less safe. Though with Hauser, he would just become a bullpen arm. Like, we've seen that before in Milwaukee. So I don't think that's close to happening. But yeah, he's got to pitch better. He can't pitch to a 7 ERA. That's for damn sure.
The one thing I say about the trigger finger, itchy trigger finger, stuff like that, like, I get it. You're right. Like, the whole point of action here is there's other people that we could test out. And why not see what we could do? And you're going to have to move up and down, stuff like that. But I do disagree where there are some people that they're going to have to perform. Otherwise, they're going to get cut soon. I do see that happening. And again, Tonkin and Ramirez were two people that he kind of moved on from quick. There was reasons why he could bring him back potentially. But like Joey Wendell, we're talking about, like, I know he's getting paid a little bit more than some other guys, which is not a lot. But if he's not an asset, he's going to lose his job. If he's
Joey Wendell is a backup infielder. And Joey Wendell said a little bit, and he's gotten some big hits. His defense the other night completely sucked.
It was atrocious.
It was awful. Almost cost him the game. I don't think he's in danger of losing his backup role. I think Zach Short's in danger of not being a major leaguer for long. He probably shouldn't be a major leaguer for long. But I don't think that they're going to cut Joey Wendell, because Joey Wendell's a useful baseball player. Look, sometimes over the course of a season, we all get emotional. We all get pissed off. We all get angry about moments in a game. And what Joey Wendell did on Friday night was abysmal. But I can't ignore what he is. And he is a positive asset for this team, believe it or not.
Yeah, but even if it's not just cutting him, I think they will look to trade him. Because if you and I think that Stearns thinks that Wendell is an asset, I think there's other teams that probably think that too. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe they trade for something down the line. Again, if this team is going to hover around 500 and is going to be making a playoff push, come trade deadline, there's going to be additions, not subtractions. And I think that they're going to want to save some money for that.
We leave you with this very interesting email from Levi. Levi writes, converting from being curmudgeons. Evan, it is with a heavy heart that I inform you that the days of New York fans booing players with a cynical eye towards their production are over. Francisco Lindor is now batting 321 with a couple of bombs since his standing ovation and seems to be coming into form. Trey Turner had a similar situation last year. The positive effects of supporting players have been conclusively proven to deliver the results as opposed to the negative interactions. Look at Giancarlo Stanton and the boos from the Yankee Animals when he had a pitiful opening day week a few years back. Boos get you nowhere. Cheers may get you somewhere. The choice is clear and obvious. We must retire our cynicism for smiles. Note, major props to Evan Roberts for being ahead of the trend and never booing players of his own team. Call it intuition, call it genius. It's the right way to go. Best and thank you for the Ricos, Levi, a formerly cynical Mets fan. Well, let me address a few things. My decision, my life decision to not boo my own players is something that was just instilled from my dad. My dad was never a booer. My dad also will never stand with two strikes in a game. That's another thing he won't do. So I follow that as well. So I will never stand at a baseball game when they are one strike away. He has a story for why that happened. I guess he used to stand. He used to be everybody's on their feet. We're about to win a game. And he did it the night that Terry Pendleton hit a very famous home run against the Mets back in 1987. And so from that day forward, my dad said, I'm never standing again. And he taught that to me when I started watching baseball. So I never stand, just like I never boo. So it's not as if I cannot accept those platitudes from Levi. I am not a genius. I don't see it as, I got to support my guys. It's just something I choose not to do. I'm not a big booer, but I don't not do it because I think it's going to lead to other things. As far as Lindor is concerned, Francisco Lindor is a really good baseball player. Okay? He's very good. Slumps happen in baseball. Sometimes you slump to start a year and it's much more obvious. Francisco Lindor getting hot cannot be attributed to a standing ovation. It's attributed to he's good. He was going to get hot. He wasn't going to hit 090 for the entire season. He wasn't finished. He's not Bernard Gilkey in 1997. Like, that's why I'm not against anyone who stood up and cheered him. That's great. You could do whatever the hell you want. But I disagree with the conclusion that Levi came to that. And by the way, same with Trey Turner. Trey Turner's a good baseball player. Eventually he was going to get hot. And it's not as if Lindor got hot right away. It took him a couple of games. Then he got hot. So while I am not a booer, I'm not a supporter of booers. I've gotten into some arguments with some of my fellow Met fans about booing, specifically Mike Piazza back in the day. I'll never forget that. Drove me nuts. We cannot attribute Lindor's hot streak to the cheering. That is what we call convenient something. The word convenient should be in it, though. Convenient decision-making or something of that nature. Does that make sense? Yeah, I think that all made sense. Either way, great weekend for the Mets. That had a cloud hanging over it, and that's the fact Francisco Alvarez is out for a couple of months. We'll give you a couple of Ricos this week, and especially after the series ends on Wednesday afternoon against the San Francisco Giants. You can always leave us a voicemail at 725-222-8699. You like how I got that off the top of my head? 725-222-8699, and also email us to ricob@gmail.com, ricob@gmail.com. You can hear Pete with Brandon and Sal, 10 a.m., middays on the Fan. I'll be with Tiki all week at 2. The Monday show will start later because there is a Yankee day game on a Monday afternoon. So if you're looking for Evan and Tiki, you'll get it. You'll just get it later. Whenever that Yankee game ends, about 40 minutes after that, after the postgame show, we'll be on the air to get you set for what's going to be a big game two at Madison Square Garden between the New York Knicks and the Philadelphia 76ers. Either way, appreciate you downloading and subscribing. And watching, if you did on YouTube, Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.